studio album of original material in nearly two decades, Love Chant. They say that the 90s are back, but listening to the Lemonheads, one wonders if they ever went away. Opening the show is Aaron Ray. More information about the Lemonheads at the Fine Line is available at first-avenue.com.
Winter is here. Ramsey County Winter Warming Spaces are open every night between 9 p.m. and 7 a.m. now through March. These spaces are available to anyone in need of a place to warm up overnight. If you or someone you know need a place to warm up overnight, call 651-266-1035 between 5 p.m. and 5 a.m. That's 651-266-1035. To find out more, visit ramseycounty.us/warming spaces.
Support for KFAI comes from the Parkway Theater and Lounge, presenting The Honey Dogs, Friday, December 19th. Minnesota rockers, The Honey Dogs, take the Parkway stage with their latest release, Algebra for Broken Hearts. It's their first new album in 9 years, and their first in 28 years with the original Honey Dogs lineup. Opening the show is 6 Mile Grove. More information on The Honey Dogs is available at theparkwaytheater.com.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Bonjour, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Cole Primo. Today, we're revisiting our chat with Pono Asuncion, an interdisciplinary artist, storyteller, illustrator, and culture bearer. Drawing inspiration from childhood memories and ancestral roots, Pono's art explores themes of alternate worlds, the extension of family lineage beyond this sphere, and the significance of recovering and honoring one's history and identity, pulling on inspiration from systematic barriers around us and how the disruption of colonialism affects the passage of knowledge. Pono takes us on a journey through their creative process and a whole lot more. This episode originally aired on September 5th, 2024. Enjoy.
The worlds that I create in my art are kind of explorations of what it could mean if other worlds exist. If our lineages extend past this world and kind of extend to other worlds, what would it mean to try to recover family history and family knowledge?
Bonjour, Anine. Welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Cole Primo.
And I'm your other host, Leah Lam. Miigwech for joining us. Native Lights is more than a podcast and radio show at its core. It's a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Every week, we have captivating conversations with great guests from a bunch of different backgrounds, musicians, artists, doctors, educators, language warriors, you name it. We talk to them. We talk to our guests about what they do, about their gifts, and how they share those gifts with their community. And it all centers around the big point of purpose in our lives. And I can't wait to continue amplifying Native voices today. How are you doing, Cole?
Doing great, you know. We're in the final phase of summer here, so trying to enjoy it as much as possible. Planning on going canoeing, an overnight canoe trip, but I have to navigate the weather forecast to make sure we don't get rained on. You know, I'm enjoying life. How are you doing, Leah?
I'm doing pretty good. I think this time of year is always so nostalgic for me, you know, with the start of a school year and just knowing that time is just flying by. You know, it just kind of marks another time of year for me. I feel like this time of year for me is a new year. Like January 1st for me isn't a new year. It's just the same old, but this time it just feels different.
Maybe it's because your birthday is just come and gone. Happy belated.
That's true. Thank you.
So excited for that.
No, it's a good one. Double the drinking age, right?
Sheesh. Nah. You wear it well, Leah. You wear it well.
Yeah, thank you. I had people ask me like, oh, is this a big birthday or what birthday is this for you? I'm like, double the drinking age, I guess.
Jeez. No, that's good. But yeah, so, this summer's gone by so quick. It's kind of crazy to say that every year. But
I know.
Just, come on. It seemed like it just started, like June was just
underway, and now here we are at the end of August.
Yeah.
Just like that.
But I'm really excited. Today we're going to be speaking with Pono Asuncion.
Yeah.
Pono uses Z, they pronouns, and is a self and community-taught multimedia and disciplinary maker, storyteller, illustrator, and culture bearer. Really wonderful art. So, you know, I'm in Grand Rapids, and the McCroskey Arts Center is just down the road from me. And these past couple months, Pono's work has been at the McCroskey. That is ending here, but their artwork is so magical. I don't really know how to describe it so much, so maybe they'll do a much better job than I will, but it just reminds me of something that you might only see in a dream, vivid colors. So I'm really excited to talk to them about their work and, you know, how their work fits in with their life and, yeah, all of that good stuff. So let's welcome Pono Asuncion.
Hello.
Hey, Buju, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good.
All right, Buju, Pono, could you please start out by, you know, introducing yourself and just telling us where you're joining us from, a little bit of background, you know, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so my name is Pono. My pronouns are Z and they, and I am based in Bereota Otunwe, or known as Minneapolis, off the shores of Wiratopa and Bidemakaska. So a really beautiful place to be. And I kind of committed to an art practice and learning and self-teaching and kind of trying to share my ideas maybe like 3 years ago now. Been creating my whole life, but I kind of marked that as when I believed that I could be like a capital A artist, as I thought of it. And yeah, my day job, I'm an arts administrator. I work at the McKnight Foundation as a program administrator for the arts and culture team and for the neuroscience teams. Two very different fields, but very fun. Support the teams over there for their scheduling and meetings and stuff. Yeah, and I make a lot of stuff, and I kind of can't do anything but think about making or make or talk about it.
You make stuff. I like it. All right, we like to follow that up with, you know, how are you doing? How's the family doing?
Good, yeah. Thanks for asking. They're kind of all over the place. So I have family in Minnesota, in Rochester, in Northfield. I've got some nieces down there. They're good. I've got a lot of nibblings. They're mostly younger than me. Some of them are older than me, but we all grew up together and we're kind of in a stage where we're all becoming adults and some of us are actually having kids. So I have great nibblings. And so it's been really cool to connect with them as like our fully cooked human selves and be like, oh yeah, let's compare notes. They're all finding their ways. There's a lot of them. My brother has 7 kids and one of my sisters has 2 and another sister has 3. So when you ask how a family is, I'm like, okay, which cohort? Some of my family is living in Hawaii. My brother is a graphic designer out there. He's living with my mom and his fiance. It's kind of all between Minnesota, Hawaii, and California. And then, yeah, some family I haven't met yet in Puerto Rico and the Philippines and probably other places. Mostly overall, we are finding our ways. We are chugging along, being messy, complicated, beautiful people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see from your bio that you have a family member that's not a human, but a dog.
I do.
Can you tell me about your dog?
Oh my gosh, yes. So we got him in 8th grade, or I got him in 8th grade. So for context, I'm 27 now. I'm about to be 28. So he just turned 14. Got him as a kid. Everything that I've trained him to do, it's really reflective of that time of my life. So he only knows how to like roll over and talk and speak, but not coming and staying, those sorts of things. I didn't get to live with him full time until a few years ago, and he was being fostered for a bit, and now we have him back, and he's just living a beautiful, retired, nap-filled life. He just wakes up from one nap to go to another nap spot.
What's his name?
Kumu. I also picked that in 8th grade. I had my dad's Hawaiian dictionary, and I saw that one of the meanings of Kumu is handsome. So I was like, yes, that. I didn't see that it also can mean fish woman or fishmonger, but also teacher. If you've heard of Kumuhina, she's a Kanaka teacher. So Kumu in the handsome way, but I guess he's a handsome teacher fish woman.
Well, Pono, we like to make sure to ask, you know, is there anything that's on the top of your mind these days?
Yeah, transitions. This is the first year that I'm kind of not absolutely devastated that it's August and it's going to be fall soon. Like, I've kind of been having more grace for like the cyclical way that Minnesota moves through time and like how that's a nice marker of time. I'm also thinking a lot about visibility in a lot of different ways. I think I'm in a place where a lot of the identities I hold can be very confusing to a lot of people and not necessarily be readily understood.
Are there aspects of your identity that you want to make sure to get across for people?
It's important for me to communicate about my neurodivergent identity. For me, that means like autism and ADHD and kind of how that informs how I find community, how I relate with and to people, how I find solidarity. And the visibility piece goes along with that because, you know, in the media, in just the general consciousness of, you know, the society that I live in and that we live in is that these things show up a very particular way and usually only in young white cisgender boys. And I'm none of those things. And so those things show up very differently for me. Of course, I'm Indigenous. I have lots of different Indigenous lineages. And that's something that I'm learning more about and learning more about the specificities of so that I can say like, yes, I'm Indigenous and I'm Taino or I'm Ilocano, I'm Kanaka. And of course, queerness, transness. I was born with an F on my birth certificate and that means I move through the world in a certain way.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're revisiting our chat with Pono Asuncion, an interdisciplinary artist, storyteller, illustrator, and culture bearer.
Well, you mentioned becoming a capital A artist. Was there like an event or like a realization that you had when that became true? Like, could you talk about just becoming that artist?
I tend to unconsciously build up toward big decisions in my life and then impulsively make the declaration that I'm going to do whatever thing that I've been unconsciously building toward. That's kind of how it happened. I was bringing up laundry in our apartment basement and I was like, you know what? I want to be an artist. And I didn't know really what that meant to me. It means I want to make a lot of things and I want to share with people. I came upstairs from the basement and said to my partner, Miriam, I want to be an artist. And she was like, cool, you can do that. And I went, yeah, I can do that. Okay. The community org that I worked for had an extra iPad and I had some ideas for like some mutual aid projects that I could contribute art to. So I was learning digital art. And then my partner, Miriam, and I were also talking about writing and illustrating a children's book together. I was like, well, if I'm going to try to illustrate a book, I want to learn some more about illustration and actually commit to like learning the things that I want to learn. And those things all kind of mashed together. They all happened within the same week or months. It happened over time, but that's kind of what I remember.
Well, Pono, I was thinking, I'm up here in Grand Rapids, right next to the McCroskey Art Center. Your work was showing there. It's so imaginative, vibrant. Can you tell me a bit about that exhibit?
Yeah, it's still kind of surreal to know that my art is up in a central community hub that people pass through a lot. So in a community of people I didn't know, and just being known as Pono, the person who made the weird stuff on the walls, that was really, really special because I got to connect with a lot of people who were either artists themselves or who connected in some way to something that I said in the artist remarks. It was also really cool to be in a space that really feels like it supports and centers Native makers and artists.
Yeah, it's a great crew at the McCroskey Art Center. And Grand Rapids is just this lovely city that's supportive of artists.
We stayed over at an Airbnb close by and took like a little adventure. And so actually got to like see and experience the town and community. That felt important too, to not come in and then drop off my stuff and leave and not sort of understand literal physical place where I was. So
can you say more then about your artwork? I want to hear how you describe your art style and your approach.
I think about like kind of how silly it is. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty silly, isn't it? And whimsy and silliness help us see the absurdity in everything, including like systems of power and the absurdity inherent in white supremacy and capitalism. And if we can like use whimsy and silliness to critique that, I feel like it's a more sustainable way of going about critique and asking for change.
Pono, how would you describe what your artwork looks like and what medium you use?
I want to talk about institutions and power and home and grief and diaspora all in a really indirect way. Yeah, the worlds that I create in my art are kind of explorations of what it could mean if other worlds exist, if our lineages extend past this world and kind of extend to other worlds. What would it mean to try to recover family history and family knowledge? So I like to apply sort of a sci-fi lens to these questions of indigeneity and grief. It's also sort of my way of trying to transform grief from this thing I only understand through absence of my father who passed when I was two, his mother who passed more recently, the knowledge that they held, the knowledge that people before them held. If that can't be physically passed down, how can I, how did my ancestors, how will, like the people who call me ancestor, how do we use our creativity to make grief a more generative force and a force where we can imagine an event, memory, and knowledge for ourselves in a way that still helps us understand ourselves, our place in community, in the world, in our families, in a way that is connected and not disconnected from our indigeneity, even if the people we would look to as culture bearers are no longer around. And connect that with really, really loving comics and graphic novels as a kid and still loving making those and animated sci-fi shows and that sort of thing. And you get sort of the strange creatures, the invented languages, the sigils, they all kind of exist within this decision to believe that I'm adding to this sort of intergenerational archive and library of knowledge, even if I don't quite understand what that knowledge is.
That's so valid. And, you know, even exploring in the process of thinking through things is valid.
Yes, yes. You asked me originally how I would describe my work, right? It's funny because I've got to remember what I put together for this exhibit because I go all over the place. But what I had at that exhibit was a combination of watercolor, acrylic, ink, marker, paint marker, paintings, and definitely graphite and colored pencil. Office supplies like highlighters and tape and cardboard. I had a lot of smaller pieces that I actually constructed into collaged pieces in a frenzy about 2 weeks before the exhibit because I was still figuring out framing and how everything was going to go together, and it was going to be easier to to frame if I had bigger and less pieces. So I was like, great, I've got all of these little pieces that I've been gathering and storing away. Let me assemble them into a story that I want to tell. A lot of bright colors. I think a lot of playing with light and shadow. I like to explore rock formations. I like to explore the making of rock formations. And I like how you can depict them in a really atmospheric way that really gives you a sense of place. I think I have a lot of graphic qualities to my work. I have a lot of intricate line work. I don't think any of these kinds of pieces were in my exhibit, but I do a lot of black and white ink drawing. There was an animated piece in the exhibit, about a minute and a half long, called Decrypt. That was a digital animation that I made on my iPad. So a lot of the pieces in that were digital paintings that I made with a stylus on an iPad. But any medium that I can get my hands on, and now that it's been a few years, I kind of have an art supply store in my shelves, and I'm trying not to add more to it. I like layering, so you'll see a lot of layers and color and like a lot of energetic brush strokes. But I am excited to exhibit more of my drawings because they tend to take a more, or just a different approach to image making. And it's a bit more precise. And yeah, my black and white ink drawings get kind of strange. They get into more comics and narrative and character. So I am excited to find some way to share those with people too. But a lot of landscape paintings and a lot of non-landscapey colors or non-earth landscapey colors, and mostly done from imagination.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're revisiting our chat with Pono Asuncion, an interdisciplinary artist, storyteller, illustrator, and culture bearer.
I'm always curious, like, how does the process go for you? Is it something like you're inspired by something that just pops into your head? Is there some times where you just, you know, like what you want to do and you set out to do it? Is it different every time?
I think very rarely it has happened. I'll get like kind of a specific image in my head that I want to try to recreate. But often it's kind of like self-administrated, like Rorschach test. Some mediums, though, that might be a pencil, and I'll sit down and just start drawing shapes, start drawing different lines, start basically doodling. Like I try to take a doodling approach to making, because I'm usually often inspired by tangible feeling of being like, ooh, like it would be nice, kind of brain scratching to like paint with a paintbrush today, or like, ooh, I want to make this thing on my iPad and explore how these colors interact. So I found a lot of the time that it's visual experiments that often prompts me to make. I don't know. We've all got, I guess, internal monologues in our heads. And my oldest brother talks a lot about, he's always like, oh yeah, I was just chatting with dad the other day. I've been thinking about that a lot and trying to imagine like what that would be like for me. And so sometimes I am like imagining, you know, a conversation that I'd be having with my dad or my grandmother. And that'll sometimes spur me to make a painting. Yeah. Or it'll be an actual idea that I have for an illustration or a series. But what often ends up getting made is the more spontaneous, I just want to doodle moments. And I've got lots of ideas written down, and I'm still trying to figure out how to execute the ones that like I want to plan just a little bit. So it's often spontaneous, often just because I feel like I need to meditate somehow, or to just like kind of let my nervous system have a break. And that's often where I end up with pieces that I'm really excited about and want to share with people. So.
I hate to make you choose, but is there like one piece that you're particularly fond of and like, you know, you just hit it out of the park kind of, you know?
Oh, honestly, when you said that, I did think of one piece. So I will say that one. It's on like a 6 by 3 foot wood panel. I call it trash wood. I found some wood in my alley behind the cottage where we live. I primed it, I painted on it, and I didn't really know what I was going to paint, but I ended up with like very wise, strange looking turtle with like a stack of shells on rocks and shells on its own shell, and it's kind of underwater. I titled it Diving for Shells, kind of thinking about it as like this composite memory that I have of diving in Hawaii with my brothers and looking at the like the seashells that are on the seafloor. It's really fun to hear how other people refer to it, because some people think it's like a sea otter or like, you know, something else. And they're like, so is it this? And I'm like, yeah, if you want it to be, yeah. It's just, it's a lot of layers. It's a lot of my favorite colors. Yeah. Yeah. And that's it's actually at Indigenous Roots now in St. Paul. It's in the library if you want to go see it.
There you go, listener. Go check it out.
Yeah.
We have to ask, because in our, you know, with our podcast, we love to explore like what brought you to where you are now? Like what inspired you to do, you know, become that capital A artist? Like what led you on that road?
Yeah. I think I want to be clear. I think of capital A artist is just like, you know, like, oh yeah, I'm going to call myself an artist. So just like for anybody out there, I'm like, there's no, I'm not saying there's any like criteria for you to call yourself a capital A artist. That's just like, you know, the moment that you decide you're going to be, that's all you like. Great. But
there's an online form.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, like, before the laundry moment, before, you know, all of that, like, what inspired you to do these doodles, to do the art, to do the painting, to get it all going?
Wow, a lot of things. I think earliest it was seeing my siblings and a lot of the time my brother draw and make things. And I went, oh, you can, like, do that. I also want to do that, it turns out. And he got it really into graffiti and like characters. And so I would copy a lot of the things that he did. And then I got really into typography when I was in middle school. And so I'd copy a lot of like fonts and make GIFs for friends. So that was a lot of like what inspired me before, was like trying to figure out kind of the perfect, what I would understand now is like a commission. It's like, what would this person really, really love based on like all of the things I know about them? Let me produce like the most perfect piece of artwork and let me hyper-focus on that for 7 hours and present it to them at school. So a lot of it was like connecting with people and connecting with people in a way that I felt like most comfortable doing so. Like I didn't have to talk or make small talk. I could just be like, hey, I made you this thing. And that could be a way that I could connect with people even well. Navigating social situations was hard. And then later during COVID, actually, I got really into video games and especially the Zelda Breath of the Wild game. And I got really into environment design and landscapes. And so, yeah, I got a lot into, you know, landscape painting. And I think still, yeah, different landscapes anywhere in Minnesota or imagined in my brain. I really like painting because, the world building process is really inspiring to me.
Awesome. I always love video game references. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've got a Karoke on my arm. I don't know. You can't quite see it, but it's right there. It's a little Karoke. He's hanging by his leaf. Yeah. Yeah. I had to commemorate that. Took up a lot of good time.
Looks great. All right. Well, man, we could just keep going on and on, but I really, really appreciate you sharing, you know, all of this. I know that there's so much more to talk about, to dive into, but, you know, we always like to ask, are there any final thoughts that you'd like to mention, things that we haven't brought up?
No, I think I'll just use the last 2 minutes to just thank you guys for inviting me on. Like, I'm really honored to be able to share in this way. It feels very special. You know, I feel bad that I didn't ask as many questions of you guys because I am so curious. So, but thank you.
All right. That's the interview. All right. What'd you think, Cole?
Yeah. I fully, you know, encourage those listening to check Pono's workout because it's just, it's hard to describe, like you said, but it feels right when you're looking at it, and it's very fantastical. The colors, each painting is just so completely different than the next. So really glad that we took some time and checked in with Pono.
That's right, and we'll make sure to have their work linked on the Native Lights episode.
So miigwech to Pono Asuncion. I'm Cole Primo.
And I'm Leah Lem. Miigwech for listening.
Gigawabamin.
Gigawabamin. You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Thank you, Native Lights, for that. Once again, very interesting